Enrique Peñalosa is the former mayor of Bogota, Colombia, and currently a strategic planning consultant. On May 14th, he spoke at the Armory in Northwest Portland as the honored guest of Portland State University's Urban Planning Club. He spoke with me at the Armory on his talk entitled Planning Cities for People, an International Perspective. We discussed his views on managing sprawling urban centers, restricting the use of cars, and creating so-called democracy through effective urban planning. We began our conversation by understanding the recent history of Bogota and how it became known as, quote, an urban planning marvel.
We did, many years ago, some interesting experiments, some very successful. We made a city which was very big, very chaotic, very inhuman, a city more for people, a city where we began, after China and the Netherlands and Denmark, the first city to do a large network of bicycle ways, more than 300 kilometers, then now more than 450. We increased from 0 to about 5% the population using bicycles, and this is about 350,000 daily. And we did, for example, a bus-based mass transit system inspired in Curitiba, Brazil, but for a large city like ours, and is maybe the best bus system in the world today, despite that not much attention has been paid to it recently, but this system that is moving more passengers our direction than all of the world subways except for 4 or 5.
And this was the Transmilenio system?
The Transmilenio. We call it Transmilenio because we need to increase the social status of buses, to raise the status of buses. People tend to think of buses as a system for the poor, as a second class, a fourth class system. This is why in Portland they put trams, because they are sexy. They try to attract higher income citizens, but in fact trams do less than buses and cost much more. They have less speed, less capacity, but they have a higher social status because they have not been contaminated by the poor for many years, such as happened with buses. Of course, the bus system that we have has nothing to do with a bus route. It's almost really more like a subway with buses. But we did much more than that. Great schools, libraries, bikeways, sidewalks, in a city where practically there were no sidewalks. It was a war to get cars off the space which they used to take from pedestrians. So many of these trying to make a city, again, a city more for the vulnerable citizens, for the poor, and also more egalitarian. When our bus system on exclusive lanes goes zooming by fancy cars stuck in traffic, it's a symbol that really all citizens are equal, and that a bus with 100 passengers has a right to 100 times more space in the road than a car with one. Or a bicycle way also is a powerful symbol that shows that a citizen on a $30 bicycle is equally important to one on a $30,000 car. So we are also trying to construct more social justice, more equality.
You successfully passed a number of these initiatives that you talked about, improving public school enrollment by 34%, building 100 nurseries for children and providing the resources, and instituting the first car-free day. How were these initiatives received by Bogota residents?
Well, it was a time when Bogota was in the worst crisis ever. Colombia was in the worst economic recession of its history. The guerrillas were almost in the doors of Bogota. So people were very desperate. City had no self-esteem whatsoever. So there was great opposition by upper-income people, especially because they were affected when we took cars out of sidewalks mainly. It was extremely difficult. It was a war. But other things were interesting. For example, we established a car-free day. One day a year, the first Thursday of every February, no cars can go out in the streets of Bogota. Yet 99.9% of the people go to work as usual, by bicycles, public transport. And this was adopted through a referendum. People voted on it. People voted and decided. This is very interesting because, for example, this cannot be changed even by the president or Congress. This can only be changed through another referendum. and is still there. So there was, of course, conflict. Change is always difficult, especially by the more powerful people who were being affected by these measures.
In fact, restricting car use is something Enrique Peñalosa is especially passionate about, as detailed in his talk.
Transport. Transport, especially in the developing world, is a very peculiar problem, because most problems we have tend to be solved as we get richer. We have better hospitals, better schools, better housing, but transport gets worse because as people go longer distances and have more cars and have longer distances, traffic becomes worse. So clearly, it's almost by definition, a non-sustainable thing, well, at least with the system we have. So typically in the United States, you have giant highways. This is Atlanta. And all studies show that traffic has been getting worse in every American city since 40 years ago. So traffic is clearly not solved. Why do we not solve traffic? I mean, something seemed to be. So it seems to us when we are in a traffic jam that making a bigger road will solve traffic jams. And of course it doesn't. Why doesn't it? Because what creates traffic is not the number of cars. What creates traffic is more important even than the number of cars, the number of trips and the length of trips. So clearly we are not going to solve traffic jams making bigger roads, and everybody knows already, but it seems that we all know it, but the pressure continues to make more and more roads, especially in the developing world. Now, we don't know any city that has solved traffic problems with making bigger roads. Clearly, public transport is the only solution, but the solution to mobility, not to traffic.
And how did these changes affect the socioeconomics of Bogota residents, specifically the most needy in the community?
We concentrated all funds in the most needy. This is why we invested in public transport, in bicycle ways. We took space away from cars to give it to buses, space away from cars to give it to pedestrians, to bicyclists. But not just that. We had huge investments in low-income illegal neighborhoods to legalize them. We legalized more than 400 neighborhoods. We began to make top-quality schools, like the luxury school, like the best, most fancy private schools of the highest-income people in the poorest areas. Symbols like monuments, icons, that would show that children were important, that education was important. And even more important than that, we created a system through which the best private schools would manage these schools in the poorest neighborhoods with great success. We also did policies for housing policies to create land banks. We bought large chunks of land, voluntarily or through eminent domain, and did great quality urban design for the lowest income people's housing. We made hundreds and hundreds of parks in the poorest neighborhoods. We brought water, sewage, so actually the whole objective, even though many people abroad interpret it as an effort with environmental justifications, for us much more than the environment when we were creating this public transport and these bikeways and all of this was to create equity.
And were there any unexpected changes that occurred after these initiatives?
There were always difficulties and wars and battles, and it was painful and hard. But we were able to create some crazy, interesting things. For example, we created a 35-kilometer, which is about 25-mile, greenway through this very, very dense city, because Bogota is like 10 times more dense than Portland. And still we were able to put like a 35-kilometer greenway and like a 24-kilometer pedestrian and bicycle-only promenade. It's like a highway for bicycles and pedestrians, which is a very interesting concept. This would improve the life of anybody, rich or poor. Imagine if you would have two or three blocks from your home, you would enter pedestrian and bicycle-only promenade, almost a luxury underground cables, trees. It would change your life, even if you don't want to ride or walk. You just sit there and watch people go by without the noise or the threat of cars around you. But mostly, the city changed in its attitude towards itself. It changed. It clearly gained self-appreciation, self-esteem.
Well, your third term as mayor ended in 2000. How has the city maintained your efforts since then?
Well, the city continued very well after with the mayor that came after me. Unfortunately, over the last two periods of mayors have been, in my opinion, very unfortunate. And even the last mayor is now in jail for corruption. So, but also too much politicking, not enough technical decision, not enough management. So it's very unfortunate that very often in politics, especially in the less educated, poorer areas, people are lied to without any cost. Unfortunately, I would say that Bogotá has lost a lot of its steam. However, I think we have created a vision that anyway permeates a lot of citizens' ideals about what the city should be. And of course, we have a lot of poverty and a lot of problems, but I think the most important thing, I think, is to have a clarity of where is it that you want to go, to have a vision. And I think we have raised the level of the political discussion, and I think we have raised the level of consciousness about the urban vision that the citizens have.
In the wake of global growth of urbanization, what are the best initiatives you've seen in Latin America and abroad, and what are the biggest challenges?
We are in the midst of, we are almost beyond urbanization, according to where. Here in Portland, we have 2 million inhabitants, and we'll get 1 million more over the next 20 years or so. So it's huge growth. And in Colombia and other, even though Latin America has urbanized already, it's about 80% urbanized Latin America, still cities are growing very much because homes tend to become much smaller. While homes now may be 3.7, 3.84, they will tend towards be only 2 people per home or less. And not even begin to speak of what's going to happen in India and China and Vietnam and Indonesia and Africa. I mean, there is still huge growth to come. And world sustainability, not just environmental, but social sustainability, will depend on what we do in the cities. And I believe we can do totally different kinds of cities, with cities which would be much more dense, completely crisscrossed by hundreds of kilometers of roads for buses and pedestrians and bicycles only, not for cars, hundreds of kilometers of greenways, hundreds of kilometers of pedestrian and bicycle roads. We have to make cities much more for people. We have been making cities much more for cars than for people over the last 180 years or so. There are many good initiatives everywhere. Of course, I think we have learned a lot from the Dutch cities, from the Netherlands. Good things are happening in many places. In Portland, of course, there are some wonderful examples of large, good sidewalks, demolished highways which used to go in front of the waterfront, public transport. But I think we have still to create a completely different model, which doesn't yet exist, because we need more compact cities, but more compact doesn't mean going people to live in downtown in some big building with a little sidewalk and no green. No, I think we have to redo completely cities, maybe demolishing hundreds of acres of inner suburbs to redo high-density cities, but not with streets in front of some narrow sidewalk, but whole pedestrian areas, places where children could grow happily, ride bicycles to school in large pedestrian streets, through parks. All of this is perfectly possible, because clearly we don't want to just create some little Manhattans in Portland. Density is not that. I mean, clearly people who go to the suburbs is not because they are dumb. It's because they don't like to live in these Manhattan-like environments, which may be fine for adults or yuppies, but not for families with children. So it's possible to create high-density environments, which are better than anything that exists today in Europe or in the United States or anywhere. I think we are only at the beginning of imagining what could be done. Examples of many small things are great everywhere. Curitiba, where we learn from Brazil, is one great example of many good things. In Latin America now, for example, a city which was horrible 25 years ago is one of the best cities in Latin America today, thanks to good management and good clarity and funds, such as Guayaquil in Ecuador. It's improved a lot. We also have huge problems, especially in Mexico, for example. This is extremely bad problem of cities spreading out in low-density suburbs, very far away from downtowns, totally car-dependent. Huge mistakes which should have been avoided.
I asked Enrique how to correct these mistakes from the past, these mistakes that led to the problem of urban sprawl as seen in cities such as Chicago, Los Angeles, and the San Francisco Bay Area. And here's what he had to say.
Well, I believe that in the United States people are a little bit traumatized, that there was this very famous writer called Jane Jacobs who said it was horrible to demolish neighborhoods in order to do redevelopment and all this, and maybe she was right in many ways, but now people in the United States are completely traumatized. Now they are immobilized. They don't do anything. Nothing is possible. I think there are many examples over the world of areas of cities which were demolished to be reconstructed in a much better way. And so I believe when people talk of increasing density in the United States cities, people think it's only of making big buildings, apartment buildings in a downtown area with little sidewalks and all this, a little Manhattan. That's fine, but this is not enough. I believe that the way to do it is really to demolish large chunks of inner suburbs and to redo them in a completely different way. Of course, this is challenging, this is difficult, but something has to be done. And the challenge is not just to change what we have now, but even to accommodate what's coming. We're going to have 1 million more people coming into Portland over the next 20 years. Where are they going to live?
In his talk, he discussed this problem of density and conservation over millennia rather than decades. He even offered some suggestions specific to Portland.
If we have high densities, everything works well. Bicycles, taxis, buses, trains, subways, trams, whatever. In Portland, the real transport challenge, environmental challenge, quality of life challenge is to achieve higher densities. And I will propose something which may be very controversial to you. We must remember that we are creating cities not for the next 30 years, but for the next 3,000 years. So some big efforts perhaps is well worth doing it. Portland metropolitan area has 2 million inhabitants now, and I am told we'll have 1 million more over the next 20 years or maybe a little more or whatever. As I think to have high density, we need to demolish a lot of inner suburbs. This is a requirement. We need to, why not imagine the following? Demolish 300 or 500 acres of inner suburbs and to redo it. It's not so traumatic for people to change homes, really, I mean, because actually they move all the time. On average, maybe the people stay in a home here, in a house, maybe 8 years, 7 years, no? And maybe people move because they got a new job, because they want to change a house to a bigger one, smaller one, whatever. So, when we talk conservation, we must remember it's not for the next 30 years. It's for the next 3,000 years that we're going to. Is it really that many houses that are worth conserving for 3,000 years that we cannot touch? I am not so sure.
While this former mayor agrees that some of the changes happening in cities like Chicago are headed in the right direction,
I still think we are too timid. We need something very radical. What we are doing now is clearly not going to take us to where we want to go.
Enrique Peñalosa, thank you so much for joining me on KBOO.
Thank you very much.
That was Enrique Peñalosa, the former mayor of Bogota, Colombia, and strategic planning consultant. He spoke at the Armory in Northwest Portland as the honored guest of Portland State University's Urban Planning Club. You can see the full video of his speech at youtube.com/PortlandStateU/videos. This has been Sarika Mehta with KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.